This podcast is recorded on stolen and unceded Aboriginal land.
We acknowledge the First Nations and elders of this country, and we join their calls for justice. Oh, hello, Serious Danger listeners.
Hi.
It's us again. It's Tom and Emerald. And we're fucking off. We're mourning the Queen, so we're not doing a new weekly topical show this week because it would be inappropriate. We're not actually here in any way. No. But we're going to do something else, Emerald.
What?
Well, we're going to bring people a little episode that we recorded with Will Anderson for our Patreon exclusive bonus content. We're unlocking it. We're bringing it out of the vault and sharing it with the people.
Yeah, with the peasants. That's right. You can get it. You can have a little taste, a little yummy taste of the yummy treats that await you on the Patreon. Maybe you like it. Maybe you want more. Maybe you taste this and you go, I want access to the rest of the episodes on the Patreon. We'd like that because if you did that, it would help us pay Mike, of course. But otherwise, if you want to just enjoy the episode with Will, you're absolutely welcome to. It was a good ep. We recorded this, what was this, maybe a month or two ago?
Yeah.
And we spoke about a bunch of things. We spoke about the Gruen transfer and advertising and capitalism. We had what I would term a satisfying debate on the merits of like journalists and people who work for the ABC deciding not to vote in elections as a show of impartiality. But I found Will very funny and smart, and I think it's a great episode.
He's so good. Oh, and actually, to thank Will again for doing the app, we should say he's got a book coming out 1st November. It's called I'm Not Fine, Thanks. It's sort of like all the wisdom that he's gained from doing his wonderful podcast, Willosophy. So if you see that out and about, I haven't read it myself, but I'm sure it will be great. So support Will that way.
As a fellow author.
Well, yes, I'm an author as well. He's an author. We're all authors writing books and releasing books on time. So we're all having a great time writing books. Yeah. Will Anderson did vote for Mandy Nolan, the Greens candidate. He told us that. So he's on board. He's a comrade. He gets it. And this is a great conversation. We hope you like it. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new topical episode. Enjoy.
Enjoy the funeral. Oh, it happened yesterday. Anyway. It was yesterday. Wait, cut that. Serious Danger Australia. Patrons, hello. Welcome to Serious Danger, the podcast about green politics in Australia. But you know that because you're special patrons and you love us. And for you lovely special patrons this week, we have a very special guest, Will Anderson.
Oh, thank you. And thank you, patrons. Thank you in particular to the patrons. I'm glad that you guys have just gone with patron because this is like a talking point between Charlie and I with our podcast when we talk about Patreons. And like I go with patron as well. I'm like, they're patrons of the podcast, but he will not accept that. He feels like they have to be Patreon subscribers or Patreons. Like, so I'm glad that you've just gone straight in with this is a confusing area for me. This is probably the biggest issue in my life, to be honest.
Right, yeah. Say I haven't thought about it. I think I just say patrons because that's what Tom said and I was like, oh, I guess that's what you call them.
It's very old school. It's like going back to sort of, feudalism or the 18th century when every artist, you would have to have like an amazing patron in order to be an artist. You would get a rich person who probably wanted to fuck you, who would then give you heaps of money to do your art and just like live your life of leisure and producing paintings or plays or whatever. So you need an artistic patron.
Also how most boy bands were put together in the 80s and 90s, that exact same model. So you're absolutely right.
And so then did they just add the E for Patreon to be like, it's online?
I mean, you're probably right. You know, that's the worst thing. They probably had a few where it was like, it was originally Patron. And then they were like, maybe the E goes at the start. Maybe it's E-Patron. maybe it's like we replaced it's Patron. But then people are like, is it for pets? Is this like some sort of online pet subscriber thing?
Tom, this is what happens when Tom lets me do the intro. We've really gone off track. I'm Emerald. That's Tom. It's not an official party podcast. Don't sue us.
Yeah.
The Green Institute helps us make it. And Mike Griffin is our producer. And if you don't know who Will Anderson is, even though
Fuck
you should,
yeah.
He's a comedian, I think host of everything from The Glass House to Gruen to Question Everything. And he's a regular Serious Danger listener.
Most important. His most important work.
Yeah. It goes at the top of, I mean, should probably edit like the Wikipedia entry to have that at the start. I think.
Having me be a regular listener to your podcast is not the compliment that people think it is.
Have you been listening to other podcasts, Will?
I'm like, hey, me and my podcast subscriber list saw you from across the room and we dig your vibe. I'm joining my little list. You're going to have to share it with Never Not Funny and Oh Yeah Dude and a whole bunch of other things that I'm listening to as well, but I'm happy to have you there. No, it's such a great show, particularly in lead up to the election. I thought it was really – you know, compulsory listening to get a perspective that wasn't being represented in the broader media a lot of the time. And as someone who Tom is aware, Emerald probably less so, that, you know, my personal politics, you know, you guys are probably a little too centrist for me. So, you know, it was nice to finally, you know.
That's the greatest insult.
Yeah. No, I mean, I said it on purpose. So it wasn't a mistake, Emerald. I'm a professional entertainer. But I,
am I getting, like, heckled on my podcast even
roasted,
though you're
bitch. Yeah. Will Anderson's in town.
This is a fucking roast.
No, but, yeah, I love the show, and it was obviously, you know, that American model, like a lot of the American leftist podcasts that I listened to, it was, you know, really nice to see the growth of those shows over the last few years. But, you know, trying to find whatever the Australian equivalent of, you know, where those conversations were taking place, you know, clearly this is one of the major places where that is happening. So I think it's a really cool thing just for the broader political conversation in the country, if nothing else. Like, I mean, I think that's what I like is, I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts where the people are talking about politics and their politics don't align with my politics. Like, you don't need to, like, align with everything that Tom and yourself say on this show for it to be interesting listening. In fact, most of the time when we're hearing about politics, it's viewed through a narrative of, you know, what the norm is in the perspective to those issues. Mm. And so just the more of these things there can be that broaden out the discussion and broaden out the idea that you can attack these issues and problems from different directions. I always think that's a great thing. So yeah, I've loved it, but it's funny and interesting. Anyway, everyone who is listening to this already knows this, Emerald.
to be honest
with you.
You're the one saying it, Will. You're the one wasting time. We've only got an hour and you're just telling people.
It's a good point, but I'm telling people who are already convinced. Like the people who've gone to the Patreon page, they've signed up for this episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Like these are the true believers. And then they have to listen to me telling you guys why you like this podcast so much.
This is great.
I'd just like to say to all the patrons, you're right.
You've nailed it. This justifies.
What would they pay for? Pay for a, like, you know, some sort of service where someone just tells me consistently that I'm right and correct and have all the best opinions. So,
I mean, this is essentially like a cameo where you've got a middle ground ABC comedian to come on and tell your patrons that they're good people. Well, you're all beautiful and smart, and congratulations for signing up. There you go.
People pay a lot for that shit. They really do.
Why don't we start there with, like, you know, what are your politics? Because, of course, you know, you're a beloved Australian comedian for a very long time. And, you know, something I think I've always appreciated about your work is that you talk about, I don't know, fucking anything and everything. But there has been a political analysis that has come up regularly through your stand-up. In recent years, done amazing stuff on climate in your shows. You're the host of The Glass House. You're talking a lot about politics in the course of doing Gruen and particularly the new show Question Everything. You're also working at the ABC, so there's difficult considerations there, editorial judgments to be made there, but you're still, you know, a dumb, stupid comedian like me, so you've got a bit more freedom. How would you sum up the political analysis and worldview of Will Anderson?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I don't subscribe to political philosophy, as you know, Tom. Like, that is probably the case. Like, I can't say that I am this or I am that. I think that I tend to speak about issues that I'm passionate about. And, like, you know, whether that be inequality or whether that be the climate or whether that, you know, you can start to understand what I find important in the world through the topics that I choose to speak about and the perspective that I choose to speak about them. But it's funny to me when, you know, someone will come and see a show and they'll, like, that, you know, you'll get some feedback. They're like, that was the blah, 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 Labor Party talking points. And I was like, the last place I'd be starting for, you know, my guidelines is the Labor Party talking points on climate. It's like, you've kind of missed the point of what I was trying to do there. I don't come from my comedy from a party political perspective. Perhaps early on, like, you know, early on when I first started out, you know, 27 years ago or whenever that was, like, then it was very much about, like, you know, yeah, John Howard is like this and this person is like this. Whereas, you know, obviously in the last sort of decade, 15 years, what I've really tried to do is just talk about topics and you get a sense of what my attitude to those topics are. So there was something in the George Carlin documentary recently that he said, I'm not trying to tell people what to think. I'm just trying to tell them what I think. Mm. And so often like what actually happens is I don't set out with a political agenda at all. I just set out with a topic and I say, here is what I think about this topic. Here is my frustrations with this topic. Here is what I'm trying to work out with this topic. And then what often happens is somebody else tells you what your political perspective is. Mm. I don't sit down and I'm going to write this like left wing show, or I'm going to write this right wing show, or I'm going to write this whatever, you know, libertarian joke, or this, you know, like whatever the thing might be. I often just start with, here's what I want to say and here's the complexities that I want to tackle. Like I'll give an example. So Emerald, I've spent the last couple of years living in the Northern Rivers, which I know is a area of the world that you are very familiar with. And yes. So one of the most confronting things that I was sort of dealing with in my latest show was this idea of how do you balance like that good people can have bad ideas, right? Like, you know, the idea that, so for me, the most challenging thing was like moving to the anti-vax capital of Australia at the start of a global pandemic as someone who believes in science and the scientific method. How would I balance like, you know, meeting these people and loving these people and seeing them be great people in other aspects of their life? You know, the floods being a great example of how the community actually came together and helped out each other. But at the same time, how do you reconcile the idea that you disagree with them fundamentally on, you know, when it comes to issues like vaccines? And so I don't set out to go, here is what I'm going to end up saying. I just set out to explore the ideas through whatever my prism is. And I think my prism most of the time is that I think that human beings are a wonderful accident in the corner of an infinite universe, and we're a Goldilocks planet that may never happen again. And I'm not sure we're just doing the best that we could do. I just think we could do better. I just think that, like, if this is our crack at, you know, if this is our Eminem style one shot at being human beings, I think that we could just be better at being human beings. And so most of my work is always just exploring where I think we're failing as human beings and how I think we could be better as human beings. But if you wanted to draw a very, you know, broad, like political philosophy, clearly most of the topics that I talk about end up being, you know, my frustrations around the rich getting richer and the poor, you know, getting less and less of a share, and the fact that we've constantly been forced into make decisions that tend to discriminate on those who have the least amount of privilege and reward the ones who have the most amount of privilege. And then that just tends to inform the rest of my work, I think. Well, did that answer that question at all? That is a very long-winded answer of saying that I've never been a member of a political party and I don't subscribe to any political ideology.
Yeah. I think, and we spoke about this, I spoke about this with Jim Malo on the last episode about the fact that everyday life is political, not necessarily party political. I think that's a different matter and not, you know, even electorally political. But I think, yeah, everything is political in that it is affected by politics and affects everyday people's lives. And when people are like, oh, I don't have a political philosophy, it's like, yeah, you do, whatever you reckon. Like, I mean, I think that does answers the question.
Whether you get into isms and like, yeah, I'm a...
Yeah,
I'm,
yeah, you're a communist, yeah, or you're whatever. Yes. Like, I don't even know what I am.
Anarcho-socialist. And I
obviously think about politics.
Yes, on a regular basis.
You know what my thing is? It's very much like the, you know, the cliche of, you know, this is what a male feminist looks like, right? Like, you know, the person walking around in a t-shirt that says, you know, this is what a feminist looks like. You're like, you know what? Like, and there's been periods in my life and my career where I thought it was important to, like, you know, to say those things, right? Like, you know, to be, when you are not part of a group that is being discriminated against, it's very important to not just be silenced. Your silence can be complicity sometimes. So it's important to be able to, you know, throw your hat in the ring, lobby for those who don't have the same rights as you do and those sort of things. But that idea of going, labeling myself, hey, I'm a feminist, what I'd rather do is go, here is what I think, here is what I say, and then other people can make judgments around whether they think I'm a feminist or not, or whether they think I'm left wing or not, or whether they think that I'm like whatever it might be. That say what you think, and then the labels of that are up to other people. And of course, as always, are particularly viewed through their own prejudices anyway. You know, that's one thing that you definitely find working at the ABC, because I'm really committed to that idea with Gruen, particularly when we're doing things like Gruen Nation, that the show should be balanced. Like, we should try to, as much as we can, balance the show, at least in content, what we're talking about. But what you find you do when you do that, that's just like a Rorschach test for the audience, which is it just means that everybody will, you know, like view the jokes through their own particular prism and what it is that you're doing. So I just don't try to label myself, but I'm happy for other people to label me. I don't actually have an issue with it. I just think that's the world we live in. Mm.
And I think the real job, like an important task, is really to bridge the gap between the labels and like political discourse that really only uses fucking like insider language and terms that a lot of people don't understand, and the actions that underpin that. So like I get the kind of drawing that link by being like, this everyday person who you see as a human is a feminist, which is not just an arbitrary term that, you know, means whatever the media told you it believes. So I get that, but I agree. Like, I think ultimately, yeah, spending too much time just talking about, are we neo-communitarian fucking like anarcho whatever's.
Yes, these cul-de-sacs. The left, waste of time. The left particularly has a tendency. I mean, yeah, this happens on the right too. I mean, yeah. Rights have all these ideological discussions too about where the tax is theft and the state of the state.
And
or whatever.
I get it. Like, mm-hmm. I think ideology is a good thing. Like, I mean, like for some, and like it's good to have a framework and an understanding of historical guidelines and all these things. I'm not saying they're not important. Mm. They're just not important to me. Like, that's not the game that I'm playing.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not doing comedy that relies on any member of the public knowing who the names of the shadow minister for the environment are. That's not the style of comedy that I'm trying to make. The style of comedy I'm trying to make is, hey, the world's a bit fucked. Have you noticed? Let's, like, you know, let's explore, you know, the various ways in which it's fucked.
Which, yeah. The times I've done political comedy where it's working, you are hitting something bigger than, X has funny eyebrows, or wasn't it funny that this guy did this thing one time? It is touching on a deeper sense about how fucked up the world is, and a power imbalance. I think mainly it's more about power for you, Will. I feel like you are, that critique of looking at how society is arranged in a certain way that concentrates power in a certain part of it, and the people with power want to hang on to power, and more power and wealth flows to that particular group of people. And I think in a very broad sense, we could say that that resonates with the same kind of political ideology that Emerald and I subscribe to, and the broader left or a progressive mindset towards the world becoming better humans, as you say, might be going for.
Yeah. But
that project of popularizing that and trying to bring that into the public consciousness is interesting to me. But
unearned authority and unearned power. And, you know, part of it is because I'm not a person who's like, you know, angry at these things because I haven't been like allowed access to these hallways, right?
You're doing great.
I've walked these hallways.
Well, great,
I know these people. You know what I mean? Like, I have an incredible level of privilege, like, and have met all these powerful people, have worked alongside, had private conversations with people who have access to, you know, these secret men's business clubs. But even as early as like when I was, you know, studying journalism at university and I was working in the Canberra Press Gallery, I mean, that was the thing that put me off wanting to be a journalist, was seeing how all actually operated, you know, being in Parliament House and seeing how the relationships between the journalists and the politicians happened, but have been, you know, like 3 weeks into this job and being explained what the drip was, and that if you stayed on the drip, you'd get enough stories from the politicians. As long as you didn't piss them off, you'd always be able to do your job. But if you went too hard, they'd turn the tap off and you wouldn't be able to get the stories that drip. And I also saw that powerful people aren't that impressive. You know, that's the one thing that I've really noticed is like this myth that equates wealth with genius is, I think, probably the biggest myth in our society, is that we think that it is because somebody is rich that therefore gives them. I mean, surely, like, you know, Elon Musk going on Twitter has disavowed us of any notion that like you having a lot of money means that you have any sensible ideas. But it is still something that is so ingrained into us that like wealth or power equates intelligence. And of course, then the opposite of that, the flip side of that, is if you can convince people that if somebody is rich, they are intelligent or they have worked hard, you can also convince somebody that if somebody is poor, the reason they are not poor is because they're dumb and they don't try. Mm. And that's the dangerous part of the bit where we just, like, I mean, we have to have better taste as humans. Like, we have to stop, you know, like calling Jeff Bezos a fucking genius, like, you know, which becomes part of the narrative that we have in our society where everyone's like, oh, he's a genius. No, he just... He didn't even invent shopping. He didn't even invent home delivery of shopping. No. He looked at bookshops, which were one of the nicest things in the entire world, and went, how can I fuck that up? How can I fuck up something really nice for the rest of the planet forever? And then as soon as he'd fucked that up, he went, I wonder if I could fuck up everything.
Fuck up everything with a drone.
Yeah.
His dad was this wealthy Cuban exile. Do you know this? He got like 200 grand from his dad. His dad escaped Cuba with the revolution, I guess, because he would not have been popular with certain people who were carrying out that revolution because of how much money fucking money he had. But yeah, this I like pulled himself up from his bootstraps vibe. No, Jeff Bezos' dad gave him $200,000 to start that business in his garage.
Yeah, to come up with the genius idea that people like to shop and they like their shopping delivered to them at their house.
What?
I mean, like the bar for a genius should be that they come up with an idea that it would have been very hard for anyone else to come up with. You know, like
yeah, when you go with Einstein, then, equals,
yeah. If Einstein's going E equals MC squared and like, you know, it's far ahead of everybody else and no one really understands, you're like, yeah, okay, he's a genius. And it takes 100 years for the theory of relativity to be like, this is genius. But if Jeff Bezos hadn't come up with the idea that people like to have books delivered to their house, someone else would have later that day.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
probably did
well,
earlier
that
day,
but
their parents didn't have 200 grand.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Can I ask a somewhat spicy question then
for
someone who's just met you? Like, how long have you been living in the Northern Rivers?
April 2020.
Yeah, okay. So, like, how do you feel about the fact that you are kind of part of that, I mean, I guess, like, gentrification of the Shire? Like, it's definitely true in my time. I haven't been there for – not been there, but haven't lived there for about 5 years or more. But – when we notice the wave of celebrities moving in, and I would say you're a celeb, like, do you feel like you're one of them? Do you feel like you're part of the problem?
No. And it's a good question, but no. My partner, I'm a adopted local. So my partner, I met her accepted. Here 21 years ago, and she's a local. So we've spent the last 21 years. She was born in the Lismore Base Hospital and she grew up in Austinville. And this house was her father's house. So no. I'm the exception to the rule, landlord. I come in as
show me your property portfolio and then I'll make an assessment.
Well, the other thing we want to talk about is you know, the thing that I've talked to you about before on my podcast, Will, but, you know, I think this is endlessly interesting and might also have some resonance for the Greens, particularly in one particular incident relating to Gruen. But, you know, Gruen is this fantastic show that's been running for a very long time. People are very familiar with, of course, and has a wider remit than it originally started with, but was looking at advertising. Analyzing. I know words.
See, rich people aren't necessarily – famous people aren't smart. Look at Tom.
Hello. analyzing advertising, how it works on us, and while this is never necessarily explicitly stated on the show, but the analysis we bring to it is like how it works within capitalism and how it functions as a bit of ideological manufacturing and has a profit motive to create all this amazing, well, not amazing, often quite objectionable, but insidious brainwashing to try and convince us to buy shit that we do not need is a fundamental part of capitalism, right? Once you start producing stuff to make a profit and not necessarily to address human need, that gives spring to this giant industry, which its job is to manufacture the desire and convince people that we need all these things, we need to buy them, and if we don't have them, then there's something wrong with us or something wrong with our life or where we're going. So I don't know. I just love to hear you talk more about that, how you've seen the show evolve as a critique of capitalism over time and how you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely the starting point of what the show is. Like, I mean, this is a hiding in plain sight show. Like, one of the things that we worked out very early on was the best way to get these advertising people to reveal their secrets because, 15 years ago, I mean, there's no show like it in the world, that'll only ever been like world's wackiest ads. The idea that there was going to be a show on the ABC that didn't cover, have ads about advertising, the advertising industry generally thought it was going to be, what you'd imagine that show would be, a complete and utter critique of the advertising industry. And that would have been a fun one episode run. Like, you could do one episode of that, but you'd never get guests to come back again. What we realized early on was that you would get people to be critical of advertising, even the people who make advertising, if you just didn't ask them the question as if it was an accusation. If you got them to explain what was going on.
How do you sleep at night, for example, one question.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, great. Don't get me wrong. A very compelling one-episode series. But again, like, to me, that is very much singing to the choir. Like, to me, it is about, to get an understanding of it, you want to get the people who make it to explain it to you. And the only way you can get the people who make it to explain it to you is to use that spoonful of sugar approach, which is to not constantly be like, you know, pointing out the critical line that you have through the show, and just trust that your audience is intelligent enough that they can see what it is that you are doing, that you are unpicking something, that you are, you know, making a critique of it in the unpicking of it. Like, the only one that I ever have an issue with is when people really think that the show is a celebration of advertising, because the last thing in the world that it is a celebration of advertising. We don't talk about advertising in general, like as in the industry. We don't talk about awards. If anybody ever mentions that an ad won an award or a particular agency, blah, 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 that we've always cut any of that out of the show. This is not Mumbrella, the TV show. This is a show, as you said, Tom, that is meant to be explaining to people how capitalism works. Advertising is the poetry of capitalism, right? That's what it is. And so to understand capitalism, you've got to understand the myths around capitalism, you know, which is, and that's what advertising is. I mean, we talk about misinformation, the biggest issue in our society at the moment being misinformation. And we talk about the idea that there are these algorithms, and these algorithms follow us around, and they can start to understand what it is that we are motivated by and how to motivate us. Those algorithms don't just follow us around the internet because they're curious, you know, about our day. I wonder what Tom Bellard's up to.
Don't look into it. Don't look into an algorithm. Don't worry about it.
At the heart of all this is advertising. The only reason that they track you, the only reason that they have that monetization process, the only reason that they want to know if you spend 3 seconds looking at that ad versus 5 seconds looking at that image versus 10 seconds looking at that, is so that eventually they can sell that information to someone who can then sell something to you. Now, that something can be a product, or it could be a political ideology, or it could be, you know, anything that motivates you as soon as they have this information. But it's all advertising. It's all advertising and marketing. When we started doing the show, they said that the average person sees 3,000 commercial messages a day. That was 15 years ago. They reckon that number's more like 10,000, 15,000 now because of our phones. Like, the amount of marketing and advertising that you are seeing constantly just as you flick through your feeds on your social media without really acknowledging it. But the algorithm acknowledges it. It knows if you spent 2 seconds looking at that thing versus 4 seconds looking at that thing, and you will see that reflected in what you get fed to later. So our entire worldview is being controlled by advertising. This idea that there is even one worldview, or that we can have these debates where people have all the same information, is just, no one, it isn't 90 million people sitting down to watch MASH on a Sunday night anymore. Like, everybody's getting their information in these different ways. And the way that they're getting this information, I mean, you look at it in our industry, Tom, for the first time ever, you're really seeing a movement of like libertarian style alt-right comedians. Like, not just an exception to the rule. Like, comedy's always really been seen as a bit of an anti-authoritarian thing, you know? Like, it's always had a bit of a sort of left-wing feel to it, even if, you know, people within it might not identify as being that. The very nature of comedy, you know, particularly punching up, taking on the powerful, trying to knock them down, it has that, you know, anti-establishment, anti-authority, you know, left-wing vibe. But now there's a very lucrative market for alt-right comedy. You know, the Joe Rogans and the Joe Rogan-esque world has shown. Now, that isn't because these artists have been driven by these ideas. They're being driven by capitalism. They've seen, here's a market, here's a way that I can parlay what it is I'm doing comedically into something that will make me a lot of money. So the basis of it all is advertising. And every time that we have a conversation about fake news or misinformation or the people not being informed about news and politics, the thing that we constantly leave out of it is the reason they're not informed is because of advertising. The reason in the old days in the newspaper, in the old days, young people, here we go. In the old days in the newspaper, they would put in the big story about, you know, the that big foreign affairs story that had the 1,000-word explainer would go in there. And yes, they'd also have the gossip item about blah, blah, blah and what, but it would all be there. And the assumption would be that you would eat your vegetables before you ate your dessert, you know, whereas now we are just dessert. Like, and of course, that has meant that news websites have had to use more sensational click-through headlines. They've had to lean into stories that have more popular appeal. That's not because one day these newspapers decided we don't want to do real news anymore. We want to talk about Kim Kardashian every day, or which, you know, like child star is now unrecognizable. They didn't make that decision. It wasn't like journalists were sitting around going, you know what I really want to write about every day? Abby Chatfield, just every day. I want to write about Abby Chatfield every day. The reason, and that's no diss to Abby Chatfield, by the way, she seems real cool. But the point being, they didn't wake up one day and make that decision. Advertising and marketing made that decision because the model is based on the more click-throughs you get, that's how the advertising model works. You know, you get through to that page. So the more that they can hook you through with a misleading headline to get you to click on that page, that's not because the newspaper wants to trap you. It's because the newspaper wants you to see an ad. So even the ruination of how our media is constructed and the stories we see and the information we have is all led by advertising and marketing. So it's, yeah, absolutely, 100% at the heart of all of it. And yeah, that would be Gruen every week, basically me just going on around like that if I was left to my own devices. But we try to put some
funny clips.
Fun in there. I mean, you look at America, like I mean, they go a step further. They absolutely embrace advertising. You know, at least in Australia, we still have some sort of natural disdain to it. But like in America, you know, this is literally a country that, you know, launches their ads in their most watched sporting event of the year, the Super Bowl. Like the advertisements are culturally as much part of that conversation as the game itself that the advertisements are in between. You look at most American movies, you know that this was sponsored by Pepsi, this was blah, blah, blah. The product placement is all there. And of course, America's, you know, biggest effect on the world is the cultural imperialism of America. And most of that is through their movies and television, which of course are all entirely tied up with advertising and marketing. And we grow up knowing these American brands so much more than we perhaps even know, you know, local Australian brands or whatever country, you know, that might be going to. And then of course you have America that literally elected a brand. I mean, a dude who put his name on buildings like Trump, they elected a brand. He was, and this is, you know, the version of this is what ads get you. If all you're interested in is marketing and advertising and branding, you end up with Trump as your president.
And billions of dollars in free advertising because the news networks just love whacking him on the screen and saying weird shit.
It's funny that, like, yeah, that critique of advertising and marketing, which you just laid out, in terms of the impact that as an industry has on our lives and particularly the kind of media that's available to us and the way that journalism and news works now. I mean, that applies equally then to advertising and marketing that is used by and for capital. And it applies equally to advertising and marketing from a political movement or even an anti-capitalist movement. Like I always think about, because I think, yeah, I get pissed off at advertising when I see it as a mouthpiece of or a reflection of capitalism, you know, the cooked ads that are like, here's how, like, want love, want peace, like, they, thems, and she's, here's our fucking product. And that's like, that is awful to me. But it is interesting that even though everyone agrees advertising sucks and that it is becoming overwhelming, and you look at like dystopian movies and shows, there is often that thread where you cannot escape advertising, the Black Mirror episode where there's always ads showing, et cetera, et cetera. But there's no, like, it's not that prominent in left politics. Like the Greens aren't really that often going up against the advertising industry. Because like we advertise, right? Like, do you think in an ideal world, it's like, can we still have Greens ads? Can the workers have ads?
I know that you guys know exactly what this is, but that's the equivalent of like saying those kids should be marching for the climate because they've got mobile phones, you know, like we exist in the system. the system is run by advertising, and if you want to compete with those who are advertising, then you have to advertise. There is no value to the Greens at the moment to be able to say we are going to step out of the system that is running everything. Like, it doesn't make any sense. But can you critique the system while still using the system? I think absolutely 100% you can, and you have to. Like, that's the greatest thing the system, you know, can do, is like disenfranchise you from the system, right? They want you to, like, because they know that once you're out of the system, then you're silenced, you know, realistically. So no, you still have to be there. But we don't talk about it even in, like, there's really practical examples of this. I mean, obviously the Greens, I don't know if you guys are familiar this with, but sometimes people from the ALP blame the Greens for us not doing enough on climate change in this country. No? Yeah, I know. It's weird. But, I mean, the thing that so often does not get talked about, and, like, which I just find hilarious, is the mining tax, which the super profits tax, right, which would have revolutionized this country, because we had, like, an industry that was – regardless of, you know, the fact that it was probably well past the time that industry should have been like going as strongly as it should. It had stopped us from, like, you know, going into a global financial crisis. These companies were making super profits out of the mining industry, and most of those super profits were not going back to Australia. And at that time, there was a proposal that basically said, let's take these super profits, or some of these super profits, and we're going to put them into a fund that not only is going to benefit, you know, the rest of the country, but we're also going to come up with a transition plan to use this money, these super profits that they're currently making, to make sure that all these people who are working in these industries will be able to have other jobs in renewable industries. And we're going to put this money into making Australia, because this is the thing, we're playing catch up now, but Australia has always been in a perfect position for renewable energies. Most of the time, what you need for renewable energies is either water, wind, or sun. And Australia has all of those things in huge quantities, right? Like, so we could be the Kuwait of renewable energy. And we had an opportunity where we had all this money from the super profits that the government had a proposal to go, we're going to take some of that money, we're going to use it to transition, we're going to use it for the betterment of all. It was a good idea. And the reason that idea does not exist to this day is advertising. 100%. People can tell you whatever else they want to tell you about why that didn't get up. There was one reason and one reason only that did not get up: advertising. The Mining Industry Council, they put together because it turns out they were making super profits, Emerald, so they had a lot of spare money to come up with a TV campaign and radio campaign.
About how they
campaign.
Couldn't afford to pay any extra tax.
Yes. And nobody else could compete with that. The government couldn't compete with the money they were spending. No one else from an environmental movement could compete with the money. And they basically just used advertising as a giant lobbying campaign to make sure that we didn't in our country have, like, a super profits tax on resources. Advertising did that. 100% advertising did that.
Yeah, it was $22 million or something that they spent, which, you know, based on how much they weren't taxed, was a great deal for them.
Nothing.
I was reading
about
this the other day, actually. It was really interesting. Robert Mann wrote about how the Australian changed on the mining tax. Like there was a deliberate campaign. Clearly, Rupert Murdoch at some point, or the powers that be, seriously made a call. Before mid-May, this is back in what it would have been 2010, the Australian had described the super profits tax as a courageous policy move. And then by mid-June, it was being described as Robin Hood economics. Clearly, someone had made the call and said, oh, no, we won't be supporting this. Thank you very much.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
But also, why are you using Robin Hood economics as if that's a bad thing? Robin Hood is the hero of that story, guys.
He's fucking cool.
Yeah, that's a
real hero. Well, I want to ask you, do you remember the Greens ad that was put on Gruen Emerald? Do you remember this episode of Gruen Nation years ago? Well, you know, they have the segment, The Pitch, where they approach advertising companies and say, hey, come up with we give you a brief, and they're going to come back with an ad, and we pick apart and discuss what didn't work with that creative response to that brief. And one time it must have been on Gruen Nation years ago, right, Will?
It was, yeah.
And the brief was to try and, sell the Greens, like write an ad that would make people vote for the Greens.
The hardest challenge of all, we know only too well.
It can't be done. But it was quite a big story at the time, because it was a very moving ad that people, you know, interpreted as being very effective.
I don't think I ever saw this.
You remember this? Yeah. So it was and fill any details I've got here. It's still on YouTube, right?
Yeah, it's still on YouTube. You can find it. In fact, they did such a good job with it, Emerald. I have not watched it in years, so I don't know whether, it has dated very badly, but I know at the time people absolutely loved it, to the point where the Greens contacted us to see if they could use it as their actual campaign ad, which they were not allowed to do because, of course, it's the ABC and the ABC can't be like, you know, suddenly making an ad for the Greens.
Yeah, but they could have just recreated the entire thing, right? Like...
I think that they did do some version of that. I believe that they did like a recreated like take on what it was. It was eventually what they did, yeah.
But what was interesting is watching it back now and yeah, if you get a chance to check it out, it's like if you think that, you know, refugees should be treated humanely, if you think that the climate, we should save the climate, if you think that everyone is equal, you know, with very moving music, high quality production of lots of different people and places, and then it comes, then it resolves on if you think, vote Greens. Okay.
Ooh.
I know. So
I don't.
I know. And watching it back, at the time I remember thinking, yes, that's so great. But then also my politics were different back then and I was much more of a, you know, left liberal, bleeding heart kind of social justice warrior vibe and be like, yeah, why can't people just like think about other people and care about their fellow human beings like I do because I'm a good person. And I remember the ad really resonating with me then. Whereas now, honestly, looking it back, I was like, I think that's a little bit of a do it, It was on brand at what the Greens was like at the time. I think that's certainly true. But I think also what it reflects the change now is an idea of a much broader, you know, class first populist party, which we love and adore now, or we think is a significant improvement. Because, yes, the idea that the Greens are wankers who are telling you what you should think, and if you don't agree with us, then it's clearly you're stupid. Yeah, we're hyper intellectuals.
Like, yeah.
I just think that's
and snobby. It's snobby. That's like, which I think has been the biggest critique of the Greens for so long, that they're snobs and that they think, like, and you know this from door knocking, because people think that what you'll get when you go door knocking, the biggest risk is that people are going to hate you and get angry at you and be like, you're stupid, you're this, you're that. Actually happens very rarely. The biggest problem is that they think that you think that they're stupid.
Oh, right.
And the challenge is letting them know that actually, no, you don't. Mm. Because, yeah, so that's why I don't like it.
What do you think, Will?
I agree with that. Like in, you know, I haven't seen the ad, but just on that retelling, I agree with what you're saying. Although my one exception would be this. I think I agree in relation to this ad. I'm probably maybe just taking this a step to the side from this, which is I think that we should be in favor of the idea that we should encourage everyone to think.
Yeah, of
course. What I'm going to say. I don't think thinking, like I think saying, hey, we're smart, or if you're a smart person or if you're intelligent, then blah, 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 that's different too. I actually think the one requirement we should have of everybody is that they should be thinking. And it's often what I say to people when it comes to voting is, I don't care who you vote for, as long as you've thought about who you've voted for, right? If you write down on a list and you go, my five main priorities are I live in this area and we need a new school for our kids and this party has pledged to build a school for the kids and that honestly above everything else is the number one priority in my life, therefore I'm going to vote for them, then I get that. That's actually what voting's meant to be. Write down the things that are most important to you. Think about them. Think about who best like reflects those things, because it might be a local issue that's most important to you. It might be a global issue that is most important to you. Not everybody has to have the same set of priorities. But I do think that it is valid for us to ask that people think.
No. Like,
I'm not saying that you need to be the smartest person in the room. I'm just asking that.
Because the dilemma is, and I'm regularly frustrated, there is an anti-intellectualism in this country, I think. I think there is often a cultural product, often encouraged by the right, I think, that tries to dismiss and downplay expertise and certainly dismiss, cultural elites or anyone who's gone to a university or anyone with academic expertise on certain areas. Sometimes those people are held up as enemies of working class people or as people not to be trusted or as idiots or as, you know, out of touch elites or what have you. But, so I think there's an interesting contrast. But go on.
What I like about the ad, as you told it, though, is that, it leads with policies, right? Like, because I think, and we have had this conversation a few times in the Greens when we are developing our advertising, I know, in campaigns, because there's this wisdom that comes from the major parties who have policies that make people's lives worse. Mm. They use solely, you know, emotion or just vague ads that actually don't tell you anything about their policies, that everyone's like, well, political advertising, it's most effective when it just focuses on making people feel something without getting into to policy detail. And obviously you don't want an ad that is reading out your policy platform and is just boring and detailed. But we know that when people hear the Greens' policies, they actually agree with them and they like them, and it can change how they vote. And that's how I would door knock as well, is like go there assuming that people agree with our policies. So like it reminds me of, I know we've done ads, I think maybe this was the Queensland state election where it was kind of similar, where it's based around, you know, running through policies, but the angle was, if you knew you could win this, and would you fight for it? Would you vote for it? Well, here's the thing, we can win it. And so it starts from the assumption that like these are positive things that you agree with, and they're actually, you can win that. So that's, I like that approach because, like the policy-led thing from a shared perspective that assumes that we're on the same side, because that is still our challenge as Greens that we're fighting, is that like the perception is we want to be separate from from the people. Yeah. Like we think we're better than them.
Just very quickly, I'll lay this out just for the sake of the viewers and if people get a chance to check it out, and for your sake as well at Emerald. But it's image of a flooded house. If you think climate change needs policy change, an old lady smelling some flowers. If you think dental care should be part of Medicare, she seems very nice. If you think marriage is about love, not laws, two blokes tying the knot, and a small refugee child. If you think boat people should be treated like people, if you think vote the Greens. That was the general vibe. So it's almost just that last line, really, that is just something a little bit.
I'm just unsure about it.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always going to be an issue with the Greens. Also, is that, you know, I don't understand. I mean, the left is, this is the thing that the right will always have over the left, is the right, they're willing to put aside petty differences for one thing that they both strongly agree on. Like you could see that so much in the freedom marches, right? Like, you know, you've got neo-Nazis walking alongside yoga instructors. Like, you know, like you're like, you guys have nothing else in common, like apart from the fact that you're, you know, both anti-vaccine or pro-freedom or whatever it is that you're trying to say that you are. Like, I mean, you know, I think you might have misunderstood when he said he wanted to do a juice cleanse, you know. So I think that, yeah, I know it's a great joke.
Will Anderson, everybody.
Thank you very much. They are so often willing to put these things aside to like, hey, we both believe in lower taxes or whatever. So all these other things that we absolutely disagree with, we will just be a I mean, the Nationals and the Liberal Party, their coalition, like often like the National Party and the Liberal Party are completely competing and different ideologies when it comes to issues, but they're willing to work together to win. Mm. Whereas you look at the left's capacity to cannibalize and attack itself and tear itself apart, which is, you know, I think it's great that those debates take place. I think it's that, yeah, it's always great to be able to, you know, look at what someone is doing and having a critique of what someone is doing. And I've found often in my life, the best growth I've had is through critique, like genuine critique, you know, well thought out, well offered, well shared critique. Right. And I'm not saying that all critique needs to be that, by the way. People have the right to, you know, make their critiques in any way that they wish to. But I'm not saying that, you know, us having critiques of each other isn't important. But I do think sometimes on the left, we let it get in the way of the end game, which is like, yeah, the amount of time that the ALP spends attacking the Greens is like, all it does is make me hate the ALP. Like, you know, and there are things about the ALP and their focus on workers and all those sort of things that I am absolutely, you know, sympathetic towards, like, and probably would support. You know, I voted ALP once. I voted for Paul Keating the first time I ever voted. Probably wouldn't vote for him today if he was running based on some of the things that he says, but I did, you know, and I'm like, I have spoken to Tom before about the idea that I didn't vote previously when we were doing Gruen Nation, just because I thought it was a conflict to, you know, to be hosting a show where you're trying to be unbiased and then, oh, no. Let me finish my sentence, Emerald. So
okay.
I think no. I think well. Firstly, I think that there is some validity to that, and I think the people who attack the people who do that are actually being unfair, because everyone has the right to make their own choices when it comes to this. And yeah, you don't understand what the pressure is for these people to be partisan, particularly if they work at the ABC.
Voting. So no one sees your vote.
No, no, no. But wait.
Sorry, I thought you were finished. Sorry, I did think you were finished. Sorry.
Right, I'm gonna, yeah. I voted this time because I think that, you know, previously it was a privileged position for me to have because yeah. I was in electorates, would not have mattered regardless. So it was kind of a very easy intellectual exercise to be able to say, and to be honest, I still voted. I just didn't vote, if that makes sense.
Informal.
I'm very much of the opinion that, like, you know, you rock up, you fill in your piece of paper, you know, however you fill in your piece of paper. So I guess I didn't not vote. I just voted informally. But the truth is that I voted informally because I believed the best way for me to be able to defend my position of being unbiased as someone who clearly, you know, supports, like, you know, one side of politics much more than the other was to not engage in it, right? Whereas I think now, as I've got older, I'm more comfortable that I can separate those things. So in that my stand, if you came and saw my stand-up show, it's very clear what my perspective is on everything, but I can then go and host Gruen and not have to absolutely 100% say what I think about every issue, that I can still do my job and host something that's balanced. So I feel like at my age and now that I can reconcile that, like, I can vote. But you talk about the idea of your vote being private and that we have a secret I agree to a certain extent with what you're saying, but you don't understand how often these people are being challenged on who they vote for when they're in those situations. Until you've walked a mile in the shoes of the feedback you get being an ABC presenter around politics and the amount of pressure you get at work for balance, where essentially you're being asked to constantly defend someone who's trying to destroy the very organization you work for, is something that I don't think that people on the outside fully understand. When people make those critiques of people at the ABC pulling their punches or trying to, I guarantee you that most of the time they're still going much further than the organization or the pressure that's brought to bear on the organization would want them to be doing. And they are just people. Not everybody has the, you know, like Tom said, comedians have an opportunity to be able to express themselves perhaps a bit more fully than, say, a news journalist or presenter and these sort of people can do. And I think I can understand the idea that some of them saying, if I'm going to get 3,000 messages about my bias, you know, over the course of this campaign, one of the things that would be easy to say to be able to at least dampen that down is that I am not voting in this election. So I have empathy for it. I understand it. Like, and I think that the people who critique it are absolutely within their rights to critique it. But I think sometimes they are letting go of their empathy in the critique.
I think, yeah, like, I think while I obviously very much disagree with the not voting thing, because I think A, like, not voting is an endorsement of the status quo. B, you know, it's private. C, like, it often comes from a place of extreme privilege. But I also think voting is like one of the smallest, particularly, yeah, if you're not in a marginal seat or whatever, like, in terms of your individual action, it's one of the most minor things you can do for political action. And so I think that's why on both sides, I'm like, well, if that's the one thing that you choose to, like, define your politics, that annoys me. But at the same time, for someone like you, Will, I'm like, I don't really care what your vote is doing, because I think you're doing other stuff that's far more useful for the movement, for the left, for politics, for people's lives. Like, if I, you know, I've had this debate, I've done a would you rather with Greens, would you rather be a cop for a year or vote LNP for the rest of your life, something like that. And I would be like, well, of course I'd vote LNP. Like, it's, who cares? I would absolutely vote LNP for the rest of my life rather than changing, like fundamentally changing what I do in the rest of my time outside of the fucking one day every 3 years that I go and vote.
But I agree with that, Emerald. Like, yeah. I think that that's a really good, I absolutely 100% agree with that, which is that perspective of, so often I think that people look at that one thing, like, and they think this person, if they've thought about why they're not voting, if they've like, and I like compulsory voting. I'm glad that we have a country that I think it's better to encourage everybody to vote. But there's also a part of me, and this is not meant to be like, again, but I do like the idea that people think, like, and if they've thought about it and they've decided for some good reason, like, that they're not going to do it, then to me, I don't have an issue for that. And I think sometimes we're a little bit hard with that.
I think if I could be a voice of media
Tom,
peace in
Tom's
here.
Tom's like, stop.
Guys, can't we all get along like the left? But no, I think someone working, a journalist.
Well, we're just discussing something. Yeah, I think we're mostly on the same page.
But I think if I can, the crux of the frustration is often when you see folks from the journalist media class saying, I am so unbiased and I just call the balls and strikes when it comes to Australian politics. I'm so removed. I'm just the blank vessel that just interprets facts and reports the news with no critique whatsoever of that. Particularly if they work at a commercial media organisation. The ABC is not free from ideological bias or a political role either. But I think, yes, the frustration is in when it's presented as this extraordinarily noble and meaningful position of dipping out of voting. I don't think that Wilson that could agree.
Well, so. I think from my point of view, it's probably the opposite, which is like absolutely clearly everybody understands how biased I am. And therefore,
And that's the thing. I think it's annoying when they're like, they really are trying to say that you're unbiased, like, or that you don't have a political position. Yes. Like, you live in the world.
Yes.
You have a position.
You have a world. You've been shaped. Right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's very clear what my take on everything is, and I have been around forever, and I've made it very fucking clear. So, no, yeah, mine's definitely not, I am unbiased. But I think you can be very biased. And I guess this is the more interesting area, right? Is there ever a time where you can just absolutely declare your bias, but then go, but watch the show that I made that is, because at the ABC you have a requirement to be unbiased. Like, it's literally my job description, particularly during an election, to be unbiased. And so I am an incredibly biased person, but watch this show. Is this a biased show? And I think that it wasn't.
Yeah,
I think that you can separate, you know, who you are and what you believe from like what it is that you're making. And if we're mature enough, that's where we get to a good place, right? Where you can be mature enough that you can say, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm happy to say that I voted for Mandy Nolan, like, who's my local member here. I mean, I know Mandy and I thought she did an incredible job during the floods. And like, you know, I voted for her. I don't have a problem with that. But did that affect the way that we made Gruen? It didn't affect the way we made Gruen. We tried to, I mean, look, we did cheat a little bit, I will say, like, because, you know, they kind of want you to be balanced, but it's interesting that, like, you know, the jokes I made about Scott Morrison were, you know, very pointed about Scott Morrison, whereas a lot of the jokes that I made about the ALP were about the old Bill Shorten ads, which really isn't, if you're thinking about what actual balance is, it's not really 100% balance.
And that's the thing, the fact that you're making, that you made a show about advertising has a political perspective, like, as we've just, you know, spoken about.
The ABC is a political institution. It is a public broadcaster. This is always my thing. It's like, people who believe in public broadcasting believe things about the role of the government and the role of the markets and how society should work. So it's inevitably in terms of bias. I mean, the only, if I could submit myself as an example, but when I guess hosted Q&A, you know, Fred Nile was on the panel and we were talking, it was about the anniversary of fucking Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, right? It was a documentary about that thing. And then we had a Q&A panel where we were discussing whether or not queer people were allowed to exist. But no, I was reflecting on the amount of progress that had happened since then. And obviously Fred Nile, who's a arch-conservative New South Wales politician, was on the panel. I'm a gay man hosting the show. I obviously, anyone could tell you that Fred Nile sucks, and I think that Fred Nile sucks and I don't like his politics. But I guess in the course of that discussion, I was trying to say, well, these other people have spoken for X amount of time. Fred Nile needs to express his view. And I hope, hopefully, you know, I did an okay version of doing that, which is something like an unbiased presentation.
It's a very hard thing to do.
Look, we all gonna get paid, Tom. End of the day.
Exactly right. I've got to get paid those lucrative Q&A dollars.
All right. We've had an hour of your time. We should probably wrap it up, Will Anderson. But yes. Thank you so much, man. That was an absolute joy. And we love you. And thank you for being part of the Serious
Dirgeon
family.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you, patrons.
Yeah, that's right.
I appreciate the patrons.
However you wish to be addressed.
However you identify. We use your pronouns. Go to willanderson.com to find out all Will stuff. And there is a new series of Question Everything coming out on the ABC from Wednesday, August 18th.
Oh, isn't really? Wow. I don't know if it's Wednesday, August 18th, but it's coming up at some stage.
I looked it up. Is that wrong? No.
I don't think that's
you
right.
You seem if that is right, afraid, if that, confused, if that is, shocked.
If that is right, then I am absolutely screwed because I have not been. Hang on, that's only like 2 weeks away.
Yes.
Hang on, are they doing it without me?
Is that for the first series?
Might have been first series, mate.
Well, update your fucking website then.
Mate, yeah, I know, right? Later this year.
Later this year. Okay, great. People check out on the ABC. Thank you, Will Anderson. We love you very much. Cheers, man.
Thank you.
Will.
Thank you very much. Bye. Serious Danger, Australia.